Bacon. Are you ready, Alabama?
Hello? What, who's there? What's going on?
It's time to enter the doghouse.
Whatever's happening here, just knock it off.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
These kids are weird, man. They're weird.
Live from the Big Dog Production Studios.
How you doing?
It's the Tom Abraham Show.
That might be listed in Revelations as the cause for the apocalypse.
Here he is, the head of the household, the Big Dog.
You're the smartest guy I've ever met.
Tom Abraham.
You want me to do this crap?
I guess I'm on here. Am I on? Can somebody respond?
Welcome in, everybody. Football Friday in the doghouse. Yeah, that's right. Football Friday edition of the Tom Abraham Show, the Tony Mac edition of the Tom Abraham Show. Well, we've had a couple of these in the past. We had a week's full back, I don't know what, June? Late May, I think it was. So we're familiar with each other. It's going to be a good show. It's going to be a packed show. I'm not going to lie to you. Preparing for the show, I was naive thinking, oh man, I wonder if I can fit all this in. Or I wonder if I'm going to have enough to cover. And then I start preparing and easily, I'm like, wow. It's going to be an easy show to fill as far as time-wise. As always, you guys are encouraged to get in. 866-485-9867. I will be here answering the phones as well. Just come in, get involved. There are a lot of topics I'm sure you want to throw your opinion down on. No text window today. I don't have access to that. So call in 866-485-9867 to get in with me. You can tweet me at TonyMacUMP. At TonyMacUMP. Get involved. We're going to start today by telling you about the UMP 4K a day. We're going to give you a phrase of the day twice today. Once, top of the show, right now I'm about to give it to you, and then once at the 5 o'clock hour, that's your chance. And if you're wondering about what the 4K a day is, no, you're not going to have to run or do anything. It's $4,000 a day, four different times a day. I'm giving you an opportunity right now to win $1,000 by just typing five numbers into your phone, 62582. Text 62582, and the phrase of the day to text is check. That's right, C-H-E-C-K, check. That thing you're going to be cashing at the bank if you win this $1,000. That's your phrase of the day. Check to 62582. It's the UMP 4K a day. Your chance to win $1,000 right now. So definitely check that out. All right, there's a lot of topics I want to get to today. The first one we have to address, I have to. Longtime friend of the Tom Abraham Show. I only knew him for a short amount of time. He was a longtime sports radio personality. In Texas. That's right, Sean Adams. He was our Texas guy. Sean Adams has passed away of a heart attack. 46 years young. Got his start about 10 years ago in radio. And then, to show you how unstable radio can be, he finally got with 1300 The Zone, which is stable, in 2014. He refused to go away. He was relentless. He was going to make it in sports radio, and he did. He was very good. Obviously, we mourn him for more than just being good at talking sports, because when it all comes down to it, when we talk about sports, you either side one way or the other based on personality. I mean, my personality is based on my beliefs, and my personality will get along with most of y'all's personality because usually down to the core, we'll differ, but down to the core, we have the same beliefs. We believe in reaching the same peak of being a good person, maybe taking different paths along the way, but crossing the main roads together. And that's why it's so sad to hear in his passing, because yes, he was very, very good at sports radio. He was a great guy. You hear all the time people mourning, well, it's sad, we want to give out our hearts and prayers to this guy and to that, and it gets lost because a lot of people die every day, and it's awful. But those who actually say that, it comes from a deep place in their heart, because they're missing somebody that was very important to their lives. Now, while I only knew him for a short amount of time, Tom was good friends with him, I understand that there are many people, including his morning show co-host, is missing him very much right now. So while it might not impact you guys to as deep of a level as it does him, it's important to show your respect and just take a moment and say, wow, that's awful. From the bottom of your heart, just mean it. Wow. Sean Adams, you will be missed. Absolutely shocking. Heart attack at 46. Passing too young is an absolute understatement. Absolutely an understatement. Gone too soon. We will miss you very, very much. All right. Got that out of the way. Let's get into it, guys. All right. Now, something happened last night, okay? Something amazing happened last night.
Watson settles in the pocket. Watson tries to get out of the way and does at the 45. Still going 40. Watson cruising to the 30, to the 25.
Yeah, that's not it.
Down the sideline of the 10.
No.
And he's in. Touchdown. What a run by Deshaun Watson.
It was an incredible
49
run.
49 yards.
Did you hear that? 49 yards by Deshaun Watson. But that's not what I'm talking about. As amazing as that was, that was a struggle of a game. That was the deciding touchdown, the only touchdown in that game. We'll get more to that with Brent Sobolewski. But this is what I'm talking about.
Here it comes. A swing and a drive to deep right, down the line, base hit, into the corner, around third, coming home, Ramirez. It's a game winner for Jay Bruce. And
that's
history
right. Marches
on.
History is absolutely correct. That's, if you don't know who Jay Bruce plays for, he plays for the Indians. That's a walk-off run in the 10th inning to win their 22nd game in a row. That's most in the modern era. The longest winning streak in the modern era. They surpassed the 1935 Cubs, who they tied just the other day. On this show, Tom played you history. On this show, they passed the 1935 Cubs for the longest streak in modern history. Now, why modern? Why are they putting modern to this? Why are they tagging that on there? Well, I'll tell you. It's because in 1916, the Giants had a streak of 26 games. Why that's not considered modern, they put the modern tag on this and the 1935 Cubs streak because there was a rain-shortened tie in the middle of that streak with the Giants. The Giants tied a game in there because of rain. They replayed that game and won, and then, you know, won the next game and went on to win 26 in a row. Kind of a little interruption. It was not consecutive because of the delayed tie, but many believe that that's 26 in a row. That's why this will go down, the Indian streak will go down as the modern era of 22 in a row. I want to see them surpass 26, so there's no doubt. And I want to see that because of how incredible this run has been. It's been tying me to, in football season. I've been the advocate of, no matter how poor on paper the slate of games we have this week are, or next week, or whatever week, just appreciate it because football, it's football. We don't get a lot of it. We get 12 college weeks regular season of your favorite team. They obviously get a bye week of, 13, 14 weeks, and then you get the postseason and everything, but it goes by like in a flash of an eye. And then you have the NFL, who has 17 weeks, including the bye week, and then the playoffs. But the layover between seasons is incredible. It's far greater than any other sport. So take it for what it is. I've always been that way. But this 22-game winning streak has caused me to say, to keep an eye on baseball. It's causing me to say, well, hold on. Now, I appreciate football, and I did watch almost every snap of that Thursday night game. It's keeping an eye on baseball. Being a Braves guy, well, there's no hope left. the Indians, yet again, who I pulled for. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not sorry about it. I pulled for the Indians in the World Series last year. I'm glad the Cubs won in that thrilling Game 7, one of the probably the best Game 7 I've ever seen in any sport. But I pulled for the Indians last year. I love Terry Francona, and this is why. They're three games off the Dodgers for the best record in the MLB now. The Dodgers have just won two in a row after losing 11 straight. They're 91-56, 22 in a row. The A's did this back in the Moneyball thing. They won, 20 in a row? They had three straight walk-offs. Three consecutive back-to-back-to-back walk-off wins. That's thrilling. That's exciting baseball, and that streak was something incredible. Something to marvel at. The reason why this is better, there's not any late drama necessarily other than last night's walk-off win, but the sheer dominance of this streak is incredible. It started August 24th with a 13-6 win over the Red Sox and Chris Sale. They battered and beat the American League East leading team, and Chris Sale, one of the better pitchers in the MLB, just shattered him. And that foreshadowed this entire streak that's continuing right now. Because that 13-6 microcosm victory in this entire, you know, widespread of the streak here is exactly what's happened the entire way. 13 out of 22 innings. 13 out of 22 innings. That leaves 9 left. So there was one baseball game that is excluded in this. 13 out of 22 innings, the Indians took the lead for good in the first two innings. Either the first or second inning, they took the game-deciding run. Including last night, the game-winning run has come in the seventh inning or later three times. Three. The A streak of 20 games in a row. Three consecutive walk-off runs. The Indians? They've only had to win in the seventh inning or later three times. One walk-off win last night. Starters have gotten the win in 19 of 22 games. That's 86% the starters are winning. Why is that important? The MLB starter average of winners, the major league average for winning pitchers to be the starter, is 67%. They're 19% above average. Seven shutouts in this 22-game streak. That's more than 13 teams all season, including what the Yankees have done all year, who have a 99% chance to make the playoffs, by the way. After they won their 21st in a row, I did a dog bite for Tom about it, and their ERA was 1.70. Well, yeah, guess what? After last night winning in walk-off fashion, 1.58 ERA in 199 innings. Are you serious? Now, don't get me wrong. I understand what happens when a streak is snapped. The Dodgers were winners of, 11, 12 in a row? And then they went on to lose 11 straight? I get it. I know what can happen on the other end of a streak. But look at last year. Granted, what I'm about to say, the streak now for the Indians has come way later than it did a year ago. But a year ago, didn't they win 13 or 14 in a row? I know one team did. I'm almost positive it was the Indians. 13, I believe it got to 14 games in a row. And they were one game away from winning the World Series. They were extra innings away from winning the World Series. Rajay Davis had the big hit. I just don't think this streak, when it ends, if it ends, it's going to be like, the aftermath is going to be like any of these others. Because of how dominant this team has been. They're definitely on pace to make it to the World Series again. An NLCS against, an ALCS against, I don't know, the Yankees maybe, or the Red Sox, or the Astros, would just be amazing. And then if the Cubs can get out of the NLCS, a rematch in the World Series? Or an Indians-Dodgers World Series? all of a sudden, baseball has gotten a lot more intriguing. A lot more intriguing. Wow. That's all you can say. If you guys aren't sure what I'm talking about, if you're just joining in, this is what I'm talking about right here. This is what I'm talking about.
Here it comes. A swing and a drive to deep right, down the line, base hit, into the corner, around third, coming home, Ramirez. It's a game winner for Jay Bruce, and history marches on.
Yeah, I'm talking about Jay Bruce in walk-off fashion over the Royals 3-2 last night in the 10th inning, giving the Indians the win for the longest, giving them the win and the longest winning streak in modern baseball history. And now they're only four away from tying the longest controversial streak in Major League Baseball history. So there's that. You guys can react to that. Call and tell me what you think. 866-485-9867 at TonyMacUMP on Twitter. TonyMacUMP. Tell me what you think. Now there's something else that I wasn't even aware of until 3 or 4 minutes before the show. I kid you not, 3 or 4 minutes before the show. I think this is the 7th year in a row they've done it. The NBA has ranked their top 100 players. Now, trust me, this isn't going to be what we talk about all day. I promise. I'm just trying to give you guys an appetizer because we're going to get into a lot. We've still got to talk about Jemele Hill. That will be dealt with. Everybody's gotten to give their opinion on it, and I've gotten to listen to everybody's opinion on it. I agree with most of them that I hear. It's my turn to share my light on that. I just don't have enough time left in this segment to share what I have on Jemele Hill. We were at the game last night between the Bengals and the Bengals and the Texans. Ezekiel Elliott in the NFL going at it again. You know, Zeke had his restraining order filed, which has allowed him to play thus far. The NFL fired back, as the NFL does. They file an appeal to the Fifth Circuit, and they're trying to get it decided by Tuesday, as at the absolute latest by the 26th, which will be, my goodness, next Tuesday, the Tuesday after. They have a week and a half. We're going to talk about that. They don't want, what the NFL doesn't want, they don't want to repeat Tom Brady. Sure, Tom Brady served his 4-game suspension, but they don't want him to play an entire year before he serves that suspension. They want to get this thing settled right now so it's done now. Because if you don't remember, Tom Brady did the same thing, filed his restraining order and got his appeal and all that stuff worked out to where the suspension was lifted and he played the entire season. Came up short in the AFC Championship game. Well, the NFL won their appeal and the court decided to uphold the 4-game suspension for Brady, and he served it last season. They're trying to avoid that. That's all that is. They're trying to make sure Zeke serves his suspension now, gets all this embarrassment behind everybody. This has been an embarrassing process for everyone. So that's pretty much that. We can get into more of that. Mitch, we have the Jemele Hill thing. As far as the guests go, we've got Steve Merrill, Pro Sports Info. We're going to get you guys some lines out there. He's going to settle some tough matchups. There's some tough matchups to deal with this week, man. There's some very tough matchups to deal with. The Tennessee-Florida game, Florida's favored by like 4.5. I don't know. I don't care if it's in Gainesville. I mean, Tennessee can't stop the run. Tennessee, a non-tackling defense, is going up against a team who can't score. It's going to be interesting. Florida probably at the base is more talented. We'll get into it. I think they're more talented, but we'll get into it. You have no idea. It's Tennessee, Florida. We saw a crazy one last year, so we'll ask Steve about that. Josh Ward, SEC Insider, we'll get to him about that game as well. Steve also covers some pro games for you as well. Brent Sobolewski from the Bleacher Report will be in to talk the NFL, talk about last night. Some interesting things I noticed. Bengals using three running backs again. I thought clearly Joe Mixon looked the most talented. Not the most experienced, but he clearly looked like the most talented running back on that roster. Extremely patient. Juke J.J. Watt. for an 8-yard gain. Should have been a 2-yard loss. Juked him for 8. And Andy, the whole Andy Dalton situation didn't look very good. Missed 2 wide open receivers badly that could have decided that game. That could have decided that ultimately would have extended drives and could have decided that game. As a result, the Bengals have fired their offensive coordinator, Ken Zampezi, and they promoted their quarterback coach, Bill Lazor, I don't know, however you say that, to offensive coordinator. Some interesting questions. I mean, how long does Andy Dalton have now? Is that even a question? Is A.J. warming up already to get in there for next week? We'll get to Brent about that and some other NFL matchups this weekend. As well, Clint Lamb of Saturday Down South will be here to scratch that Bama itch you have and get you ready for Bama, Colorado State. Talk about Saban, which is really the most interesting topic. I mean, everybody, I know the big topic is Jalen Hurts and Tua, but the most interesting topic is Saban. Let's be honest. We know how that quarterback situation is working itself out. We know. Everybody just wants to talk about Tua now. They want to make sure they're talking about Tua now. That way, if, and that's a big, really big if, they just want to make sure they're talking about it now, because if that really big if happens to where Jalen Hurts has a really bad SEC game and a game they should dominate and they squeak it out by 10 points because Tua comes in, pulls away, or they just start handing it off even more and the running game dominates and they win, and Tua happens to create a little more controversy or get more playing time because of that, people want to be able to say, I told you so. That's it. They don't believe it themselves. There's a small part of them that believes Tua's got a chance to dethrone Hurts. A very small part. But the only reason they're bringing it up and making it sound like something is because they want to be the ones, if it happens, to say, I told you so. That's all that is. That's it. By far the more interesting thing is Nick Saban getting asked really dumb questions about Tua, about how much he makes, and responding really well. We've already gotten great Nick Saban quotes to fill the entire season, and there's going to be more to come. So we got all kinds of things to react to a great, great cast of guests today. So the NBA ranked their top 100 players, and there's a problem with that too. Well, maybe not too much of a problem. There are four Warriors in the top 16, 3 in the top 10. Duh. The most interesting move was Kyrie Irving, and I'll mention it right now. Kyrie Irving was dropped from, I think he was 15th last year on this list, to 25. He's the 25th best-ranked player going into this season. Why? Because he got traded? So you're telling me last year you ranked him 15th because he played next to LeBron James? It's not how you should rank something. You can rank a team because they have LeBron James. You can't, if you're ranking players based on their skill, his skill set does not include playing with LeBron James. I'm sorry, that's not how, if that's how you ranked it, then I get it. I disagree with it, but I get it. It's dumb. How many times, it's funny that a guy in game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals, when LeBron goes down in the first half with his fourth foul, the Celtics are in danger of tying this series up, going back to Boston. A game they shouldn't win because they're without Isaiah Thomas. They shouldn't be in this game. LeBron goes to the bench, Celtics leading. He goes to the bench with 4 fouls. And all of a sudden the narrative is the Celtics might tie this series going back to Boston for game 5. But then Kyrie Irving, without LeBron James, as he's done before, when it matters the most, goes off for 40-plus points, hits insane shots at the rim. He's the best finisher in the NBA. And you're going to rank him 15. And after having his career high and posting that without LeBron James to give a demanding 3-1 lead, after that performance and after he has his career high in stats, you're going to drop him 10 spots because he goes to the number one seeded team in the East? Give me a break. All because he's not playing with LeBron James anymore. Give me a break. My biggest problem is the fact that he was ranked 15th last year. Now I know he was ranked 15th last year because he was playing next to LeBron James. No, I'm sorry. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to have Steve Merrill. But before we take that break, I doubt he's listening because he's probably recovering if he's not still in surgery already. I want to give a big shout out to the big dog. Hope he's doing all right. He's having something removed from his neck today. So be thinking about him. Hope he's all right. Haven't barraged him with a text message or anything. I don't want to bother him. I want him to recover, okay? The Junkyard Babe is sitting next to him. You can't really have anybody else you'd rather want sitting next to you in a hospital bed. So we're thinking about you, big dog. I'm gonna do your service the best I can. And when we come back, we're going to have Steve Merrill of Pro Sports Info right here on the Tom Abraham Show, the Tony Mack edition on a Football Friday, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Elm. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show on a Football Friday edition. That's why you hear that fantastic music going on right there. I believe that's the Aggies war hymn. Maybe not too proud yet to start blaring that. All right, now if you guys are like me, you find it hard enough to pick some of these games straight up, then you'll find it even harder to pick games based on the spread. I'm not a betting guy, but I'm really starting to, with the picks on my Saturday show, to start getting into picking against the spread, just because it's something that everybody does. And I've had some success doing it, but it's all random for me. I don't have a system for it. I certainly don't go as in-depth as our guest here from Pro Sports Info. The expert, if you will, it's Steve Merrill to help us out picking these games. Steve, welcome in. How you doing?
Hey, Antonio. Doing great.
Well, I hope you're doing better than me because I hope you're not as nervous as I am going into this weekend. Because while it's not like a mega matchup this weekend for a lot of teams in college football, there's some intriguing, really interesting SEC matchups. You got obviously the Clemson-Louisville game also going on in the game day situation. But I can't look at this weekend without staring at the Tennessee-Florida game and saying, I can't even pick this one straight up. How am I going to pick, the last I saw, Florida -4.5? So I've got a question for you, and I want you to help me out. Try to give me both sides. Give me a reason why I would pick Florida, and give me a reason why I would pick Tennessee, and then I'll see which one I feel more comfortable with.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, that's the thing about the point spread. You can pretty much, you know, come up with a reason for both sides because the point spread is the great equalizer.
Right.
You know, theoretically, it's supposed to make it a 50-50 proposition. Obviously, the odds makers don't always set the number right, and that's why when you study the numbers, the statistics, the matchups, as I do on a daily basis, you're able to find those three or four games on a weekend where there's an edge. But the majority of these games, the point spreads are pretty accurate. I can see why Florida is favored here. I do think they're the better team overall. They have a substantial defensive edge, but that offense is a major concern still. They were extremely weak against Michigan in week one. And keep in mind, that was a Michigan defense that was returning just one starter this season, and Florida managed just 11 rushing yards on 27 attempts. You also have to be concerned about them missing last week's game, the cancellation due to Hurricane Irma. How that distracted the program is a real uncertainty. So those are some problems with Florida. However, I'm not sold on Tennessee. They put up 42 points in each of their first two games, but they gave up an average of 328 rushing yards per game. Now, granted, most of those came against Georgia Tech's option attack, but even Indiana State got 160 rushing yards or 122 rushing yards on them last week. So I do think Florida will be able to run the ball better this week. Just a lot of uncertainty with that week off and, you know, how that offense will perform.
Yeah, and you mentioned Florida being off last week being a concern. Also, how concerning is it that it appears for their second game in a row, nine players will be suspended, including lead receiver and special teams guy Antonio Callaway and leading rusher from a year ago, Jordan Scarlett?
Yeah, you know, I thought that was a bit of an overreaction by the betting public in the Michigan game when the line went from 3.5 up to 6 to +6, and then it closed back down around 4 as some late money came back in on Florida in that game in week one. However, it does appear that those offensive players especially hurt the Gators as they were really flat, as I mentioned, against Michigan. I think Michigan, though, is a much better defensive team. Even with just one returning starter, they're still one of the better defenses in the nation. I don't think Tennessee is at that level. Georgia Tech moved the ball at will against them back in week one. So it'll be interesting to see if Florida can move the ball better here. I think the suspensions are a bit overrated still, but there's no question the Gators have some offensive problems.
Yeah, and maybe some of that success against Tennessee's rushing defense has come against maybe the fact that Tennessee lines a yard off line of scrimmage. Do you see that happening this week? And if they do, I mean, even with running back suspended, an SEC offense should be able to run the football against them.
Yeah, you know, last year Tennessee gave up over 5 yards per carry, so they've been a bad run defense now for several seasons. And I know Georgia Tech runs the option. It's tough to stop that attack, but I still think Tennessee is going to be a weak run defense this year. I look for Florida to have a pretty conservative game plan here and try to run the ball, stay out of trouble. They had three turnovers against Michigan. They want to limit those this week. The over-under on this game is 49 total points. That's a pretty low total for a modern college football game. You know, most college football games average in the high 50s or more now.
Yeah.
So I think that once again has shown that the odds makers don't expect Florida's offense to do all that much.
Yeah, Steve Merrill, Pro Sports Info, here with us covering some college football games. Now, I know Texas lost to Maryland week one. They bounced back last week, but they were expected to. They're going to USC. And every part of me says, well, this should be a blowout. USC should cover the spread. But there's a little bit left that says, well, Texas is talented. They should get up for this game. It's a big game on the road. And especially after that first loss against Maryland, Tom Herman has something to prove, as does his team. Is that any reason to go in here and take Texas in the points?
Yeah, I mean, week one's always tricky in college football because there's no preseason. I mean, even in the NFL where we have a preseason, we see some crazy results in week one. So they don't always correlate and translate to the rest of the season. You have to be very careful to not overreact to the first week. And I think that was the case with Texas. They were a 19-point favorite. They lost outright to Maryland, 51-41. And then they come back last week against San Jose State, and they shut them out 56-0. Tom Herman's a great coach. He did an amazing job at Houston. He's a player's coach, so I think he can definitely get them focused again this week. And the question for me is which USC team shows up. Is it the USC team that looked really sluggish against Western Michigan in week one and only won 49-31, a game that was close in the second half until they pulled away? Or is it the USC team that looked better last week, winning by 18 against Stanford, is only a four-point favorite?
Right.
Keep in mind, last year USC was terrible in September, and then they were as good as anybody else in the nation the rest of the season. So they have been a bit dicey in September the past couple seasons. That gives you maybe a look at Texas getting the 2.5 touchdowns. USC also does have a game on deck against California on the road next week, so this game is sandwiched between two in-state Pac-12 matchups. Might not be a bad spot for Texas if they play like they did last week.
Yeah, especially, I mean, I know they had that week one flop against Maryland, but Charlie Strong, if he did anything right at Texas, it was recruit very well, and Tom Herman has a surplus of talent at his disposal, and you would think going on the road in a big game, especially after losing a lot of respect for losing to Maryland, you have to expect that this team's talent should show up, at going on the road in a big matchup.
Yeah, and it's ironic they're a 16-point dog because that's exactly what the number was when they beat Oklahoma recently, previous season, and that was a huge upset with Strong there still. So it shows they do have some talent and they have some personnel that can win games, and now that they have a solid head coach, I think Texas is definitely a team on the rise. And you can make an argument that we're getting some value now because of that week one result. This line might have been a little bit shorter at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, speaking of being short and maybe a little long, Vandy K-State's interesting. The four-point favorite Kansas State going on the road to Vandy, is it only four? Would it have been bigger had Vandy not come into this matchup, 2-0? Had they lost to, obviously, if they lost to MTSU at the beginning of the season, it would be a little larger. But how large would you expect that line to be?
Well, what's interesting about that MTSU matchup is Vanderbilt looked really good in that game in week one, of
yes,
course,
they
winning
did.
28-6 as a small favorite on the road. And then Middle Tennessee goes into Syracuse last week as a 10-point underdog, and they win the game outright against a Syracuse team that is improved this season. So that Vanderbilt win is looking a little bit better for them in week one. Can't read much into last week's win against Alabama A&M. They won 42-0. They were actually a 48-point favorite in that game, so they didn't even score the point spread. So I think Vanderbilt's a mediocre team this year. Kansas State has looked very good in their first two games. They played absolutely nobody, though. Central Arkansas and Charlotte, they are 24- and 32-point favorites. They put up 55 points in each of those games. So both teams a little untested. Vanderbilt's played the slightly tougher schedule just because they had Middle Tennessee, but that's not saying much. I think this game could go either way, and I think that's why the line is short. Vanderbilt's probably worth a look as a small home dog here, even though Kansas State probably the better overall team.
Yeah, and all the pressure's on K-State in this one. I mean, Vanderbilt, if they win, hey, everybody look at Vanderbilt. They're 3-0 now. They beat a perceivably good team in K-State. A lot of people pick K-State to go far this season. But if they lose, oh, well, they're just Vanderbilt. But if K-State loses this game on the road, they lose a lot of respect. So all the pressure on K-State, I'm with you. I think Vandy's worth a look on that one.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how Vanderbilt does play because that Middle Tennessee result last week was surprising to me. I actually like Syracuse as a 10-point favorite there. So for Middle Tennessee to go in there and win outright in the Carrier Dome definitely had me boost Vanderbilt's power rating up a bit.
Now, I'm going to go to the game day game real quick before we jump into a couple pro games, NFL games that have interested me. Clemson-Louisville. Clemson's a three-point favorite at home, according to the last line I saw. Now, they have the best defensive line in the country, the best defensive front, period, in the country, as they proved last week against Auburn at home. They're going to Louisville and against a terrible offensive line. How much of this Clemson only being a three-point favorite is the fact that they're going on the road, or how much of it is the fact that they're going up against Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, I mean, Louisville's got some edges in this game. Not only are they on their strong home field, but they have a tremendous edge at quarterback. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the best in the country with Jackson, and then you got Clemson with a first-time road start for a younger quarterback, or a more inexperienced quarterback, rather, now that Deshaun Watson's in the NFL. And I think that has to be factored in here. And also keep in mind, Louisville very well could have beaten Clemson last year. Even though they trailed 28-10 at halftime, they came back in that second half, made it a tight game. Don't forget, Louisville was actually a one-point road favorite last year on October 1st in that game.
Wow.
Now they're a three-point home dog less than a year later. So there is some line value here with the home underdog based on that logic. And Clemson, I think, is going to regress this season. In fact, their season total was around 9 wins, which means the oddsmakers are projecting 3 losses at some point this season. Could have had that in Auburn against Auburn last week. I didn't think that was the spot, though. In fact, my power ratings favored Auburn, favored Clemson by 8 points in that game last week. The line was only 5-6. They won 14-6 by exactly 8 points.
Wow.
It played out pretty much like I thought. Defense is great once again, but the offense is lacking. They did struggle to move the ball. Louisville's defense has given up 63 points in 2 games, so that is a concern. But I think they hold a substantial offensive edge as the home dog in this game with revenge. This will be a real test for Clemson.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I was on the other side of your Auburn prediction there. I picked Auburn to win that game on the way to Clemson regressing and going 9-3. I had Clemson 9-3, but I did have them losing that game. This one will be a lot of fun. Last year, I also agree, Louisville probably should have won that game, had their receiver known where he was on the field. They had a very good opportunity to go down there and win that one. So keep your eye on that one, period, whether you're doing it for the spread or just to watch a great matchup. Now, going to the NFL, you know, we're Titans people around here, and they're going on the road to Jacksonville as a one-point favorite. Jacksonville getting a lot of respect at home after demolishing Houston. The Titans losing to Oakland. How interesting is this one, and who would you value?
Well, normally I'd love to take the contrarian angle here because you've got a Tennessee team that vastly underperformed in Week 1, losing outright as a home favorite against the Raiders,
yeah,
versus a Jacksonville team, as you mentioned, winning outright as a road dog against Houston. I actually had plays on both Jacksonville and Tennessee last week, so it worked out for me with the Jags. It did not work out with the Titans. These are still both play-on teams for me this season. I do think Jacksonville will be a substantially improved team. We saw that last weekend, but a lot of the line value is now gone. Jags would have probably been more than a field goal home dog last week. Now that's almost a pick-em price and only about a one-point underdog. So I think Tennessee probably bounces back with a better effort. However, Jacksonville is still a play-on team for me this season.
Well, you heard the man. Steve Merrill, Pro Sports Info, told you that Clemson was going to beat Auburn by 8, and they did. So, Steve, tell them where they can get your expert advice.
Yeah, the website is prosportsinfo.com, prosportsinfo.com. And if you mention the show and email me, I will send you a free best bet. Steve@prosportsinfo.com for that free best bet. Mention the show, Steve@prosportsinfo.com.
Thank you, Steve, so much. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
Sounds good. Thanks, Antonio.
All right, thank you. Steve Merrill, killing me. I wish I would have heard him say Auburn was going to lose by 8 because I was very confident Auburn was going to go into ACC's version of Death Valley and take that one. Still not sold on, and I think Auburn's defense played very well. They're certainly one of the most dominant defenses in the nation as of right now. Still not sold on Kelly Bryant and that offense. I think Kelly Bryant's very talented, but I still think he's eventually going to see some things that's going to slow him up. I still think the Florida State game will be a really good game, depending on how much progression Florida State's, how much progression Florida State's quarterback makes. Because Florida State's got a very good defensive front as well, very good secondary. So Clemson still has some opportunities to lose, and obviously they're in the ACC, one of the best divisions in football within the ACC as well. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to give you a little update about what's going on around the world of sports. It's a Doghouse Sports Report. That's coming up next on the Tom Abraham Show, Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump. Welcome back, Tom Abraham Show, Football Friday edition, Tony Mack edition. That's right, Tony Mack. Tom out, the big dog is out today. Had a minor surgery, as he'd mentioned, removing a lump from his neck. And that's going to play right into our short little doghouse sports report. The big dog is okay. That's right. He made it. He texted me. He said they think they got it all. Just beat up and sore now. The wife thought recovery was funny, and he sent a little video. And based on the video, it seems as if he was right. They gave him the good stuff because he is knocked out. He's mumbling some words, and you can hear muscles. They think, yeah. His eyes can't. He can't even open his eyes. I don't even know how he's texting me right now. I think he's a little farther along now than he was when that video was taken. But he's all good. Everything's going well. He's sore. He'll be able to watch college football this weekend. I know everybody was concerned about that. So, Big Dog, we're glad you're okay. We're thinking about you. Also, if you didn't hear, the Cleveland Indians extended their streak yesterday to 22 games in a row. Dominant fashion. That winning streak has been 10th inning walk-off by Jay Bruce to beat the Royals 3-2. This winning streak started August 24th with a 13-6 beating over Chris Sale and the Red Sox. 13 out of 22 wins for the Indians. They took the lead for good in the first two innings. First two innings. Insane. Insane. Some other incredible stats on this. They've had 7 shutouts in this 22-game streak. More than 13 teams have had all season, including the Yankees. 1.58 ERA. That's down. 1.2 runs, earned runs, from their last win. 199 innings. They've given up 1.5 earned runs. Are you kidding me? This is incredible. That's something to keep your eye on. Something to keep your ear on is the second hour of the Tom Abraham Show. I will be back with Josh Ward. SEC Insider will be in to talk Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, South Carolina, LSU, Mississippi State, and much more. I'm Tony Mack. This is the Tony Mack edition of the Tom Abraham Show. Sports Radio 730, 103.9 The Ump.